Herschel agreed. Any word on who they got to chaperone us yet?
Not sure who it will be, but someone told me they always get the top-ranked people from sophomore year to fill the role. It's a reward to them, since they get to spend their time on a free trip, and it lets us know from the get-go that these are chaperones we can't mess with,
Alex said. Some of the top-ranked sophomores, huh? I wonder if it will be anyone we've met, Vince said.
I doubt it, Alex replied. I mean, the only ones we really talked to were the beer pong douches, and I'm not thinking either of them qualifies as a heavy hitter.
People can surprise you, Vince said. Besides, you're forgetting someone. The hostess.
Oh, yeah, Alex said. Man, she did have some badass mojo about her. Sort of cute, too, in a scary way. I don't remember her name, though.
I do, Vince said. It was... Angela, Shane DeSoto mumbled as he neared the blonde girl in the hallway. He gave her a brief nod and hoped she would continue walking. He was not so lucky.
Shane, she replied. Have you heard the news?
She pulled herself to a stop, and he was expected to do the same. He complied. They were in their HCP uniforms, walking along the corridors below campus. He'd just wanted to squeeze in some quick training. Of course he'd run into her, though. It was that kind of a day.
I have not, he said stiffly. It looks like they selected Ben and me to supervise the freshman river trip this year, she said. I expected as much, Shane said. You are the number one in your class, after all. That's why I don't plan on going.
Don't be silly. Your name was on the sign-up sheet, Angela said.
I must inform you that you are mistaken. I certainly did not sign up for this trip.
And yet your name is on the sheet all the same. I suspect you'll have to buck up and have some fun anyway, Angela said.
Shane stared at her. Of course, she had put his name on the sheet. She undoubtedly had some other plan should he try to cancel his place as well. Likely several others for different contingencies.
Why is it mandatory I attend?
Because it's one of the best parts of being a freshman. One of the few good ones, actually. Plus, it is tons of fun, and I think you could use that,
Angela explained.
There is training to do, Shane countered.
With whom? Nearly everyone worth fighting will be on the river. Even your sparring buddy Chad signed up,
Angela said.
Did he sign up, or is his name on the sheet?
Does it matter?
Yes. You might find him less receptive to your machinations than I am,
Shane pointed out.
Nope, he agreed to go willingly, Angela said. I just had to motivate him.
Threats?
Promised I would give him a match if he went.
Ah, Shane said. That would do it. I suppose you have me over a barrel, then.
I always do, Angela replied. Try to just go with it and enjoy yourself.
I'll do my best.
Uh-huh. I'll believe it when I see it, Angela said.
That is probably the best strategy.
Angela patted him on the shoulder.
That much I already know.
Was there anything else?
Shane asked.
Just that.
So I can go now?
Angela waved him off.
Go, train, be boring. But come next weekend, you better be prepared for some relaxation, little brother.
I'm bigger than you,
Shane replied instinctively.
But not better, she countered with a wicked grin. Remember, fun is not the enemy.
With that, she sauntered off toward her own class. Shane continued drudging forward, a foul mood descending over him. If he was losing spring break, that meant he needed to work extra hard this week. It was all well and good to preach the benefits of having fun and enjoying oneself, but those speeches could only be made by the one standing at the top of the hill. Shane looked dearly forward to tossing down a few himself. Eventually. 117.
Come on, be brutal,
Alice said, turning around slowly.
Honest opinion?
Mary asked.
Absolutely. It seems to show an awful lot of skin,
Mary replied.
That's the point. But does it cross the line between look at this hot body skin and I have no self-respect and gain all my sense of value through your ogling stares skin?
You might be leaning a bit toward the latter,
Mary said.
I'll put it in the maybe pile then,
Alice said. She stepped into her bathroom and shut the door. A moment later, she emerged in sweatpants and a t-shirt, with a small amount of pink fabric between her hands.
Next, I'll try the green one.
It was the night before the river trip, and Alice had more or less, bullied Mary into helping her choose some appropriate swimwear. It was far from the way Mary wanted to spend her first night of vacation, but she knew Alice was feeling a bit insecure about being the only girl from their group going on the trip.
I still can't believe you're skipping this,
Alice said as she rifled through her dresser.
It's going to be the event of the year.
I'll hear all about it secondhand,
Mary said.
I'm sure people's heads will be swimming with memories of this for weeks to come. As for actually experiencing it, I think I would enjoy that significantly less.
I know. The party thing isn't your scene. Still, it won't be as much fun without you.
Mary laughed.
I sincerely doubt many people will notice my absence. In fact, if the levels of alcohol provided are anywhere close to what I've heard, I doubt they'll notice much of anything.
I don't think it will be that bad. I mean, it's not like most of us have much practice drinking. My money says everyone talks a big game and then only has, like, a beer each,
Alice said. To this, Mary could only nod. It would have taken her far too long to explain to Alice the extent to which hormone-driven youths in scanty clothing would leap upon a social lubricant as effective as alcohol. Instead, she changed the subject.
This seems like an awful lot of effort just to decide what swimsuit to wear while floating motionless in a tube,
Mary pointed out.
Someone specific you're hoping to impress?
Don't be silly,
Alice lied. Out of courtesy, Mary pretended not to be aware of the man who dashed through her mind at that question.
It's just our first time in a really relaxed, social setting. You never know who you might hit it off with.
I see. You're trying to look good just in case you strike up an enjoyable connection with a boy,
Mary said.
I was looking at it more as chumming the waters and seeing who comes for a bite, but
your version sounds much nicer,
Alice said.
Yours does have an almost predatory tinge to it,
Mary said.
Maybe mine was better then,
Alice chuckled.
Still can't believe you're not at least curious to see all the boys in their swim trunks. Don't you want to see who's a hottie and who's a naughty?
I have faith I will receive a diligent report on that information once you have returned,
Mary said.
That is an excellent point,
Alice yielded.
Aha!
Alice's hands emerged victorious from the dresser with a swath of dark green fabric. She promptly walked back into the bathroom and shut the door. She stepped back out a few minutes later.
So?
Alice asked tentatively.
You look like you're one fast movement away from tumbling out of it,
Mary assessed, quite accurately.
Really? The adjective I think best describes it is bursting,
Mary said. Alice looked down at herself.
Bursting, huh?
I can work with that. Another for the maybe pile.
All right, boys, from the top, Nick announced. Swimsuits? Check, said Herschel, glancing in his bag for visual confirmation. Check, Vince echoed. Towels? Nick asked. Check, Herschel and Vince popped off in unison. Sunscreen? Check, Vince said.
Roy doesn't really burn, so I didn't bother picking up any. Plus, he likes to tan, Herschel said.
Fair enough. Power-based immunity invalidates need, Nick judged. Flip-flops? Check, Vince said.
In multiple styles, Herschel added.
Good stuff, Nick said. Novelty beer-drinking helmets?
Check,
Herschel said. Yeah, it's in there, but I still don't see why I need to bring one when I don't even drink, Vince protested. Vince, your objections were heard, considered, and overruled earlier in the night. Let's not revisit old business, Nick said. Vince looked over to Herschel for backup.
In all fairness, they were,
Herschel pointed out. Fine, Vince mumbled. Check. Good man. Sleeping bags? Check. Vince and Herschel sounded off together. Tents?
Check.
Flashlights? Check. Case of condoms?
Check.
Herschel snapped off in rhythm.
Wait, what?
Vince yelped. Case of condoms. Come on, Vince, try and keep up, Nick chastised him.
Why would I need condoms for a river trip? And why a case of them?
Vince, be logical. We're spending a few days with beautiful, fit women who've had little outlet for all their pent-up frustrations over the course of the year. Add into that the remote setting, not to mention the tremendous amount of booze being bussed in, and can you really not imagine how it might be better to be prepared and have a condom rather than to make a mistake in the heat of the moment? Nick asked him.
I guess I can see some logic behind that, Vince admitted. But again, why a case?
Nick shrugged. Aim for the stars? Vince glanced over at Herschel.
What, you think I'm arguing with him? Remember, I'm packing all this stuff for Roy. The last thing I want is to explain to people how my alter ego knocked someone up, and that's why I technically have a kid,
Herschel said.
I packed two cases, just in case.
Vince sighed.
Okay, okay. Points have been made. Let's just keep going.
Fine by me, Nick said. He glanced at the sheet of paper in his hand and ran a pen down it. Where was I? Ah, there we go. After the condoms. Insect spray? Check. First aid kits?
Check.
Chocolate-flavored body spread?
Oh, come on!
And so the night went.
118. The parking lot was a celebration in itself. Freshmen were gathering to obtain directions for driving out to the trip's starting point, then lingering around to greet friends as they joined the commotion. What began as a few cars stocked with students clutching maps soon escalated to nearly the entire first-year population of the HCP. Thankfully, most of them were carpooling. Otherwise, there never would have been enough room for everyone.
I think that's everything, Vince said, surveying Nick's trunk. Your stuff, my stuff, Alice's stuff, Alex's stuff, and Will's sister's stuff? Nick asked.
Yep, we've got a full house, Vince confirmed.
Also, my name is Jill,
Jill added in.
Just ignore him, Alice advised her. He remembers. He just likes being difficult.
Jill shrugged.
Whatever. He's driving us all down. That makes up for a little annoyance.
The day is young, Alice mumbled under her breath.
Vince turned away from the trunk and faced his girlfriend.
Sure you don't want to ride with us? We could have someone sit on a lap to make room.
Thanks, but no thanks,
Sasha replied, patting him on the chest.
I have, like, zero patience for sitting in cars. It bugs me to spend hours doing something I can do in minutes.
It won't be as fun without you, Vince said.
Damn straight it won't,
she agreed.
I'll be waiting when you guys arrive, though. So drive fast.
That's more up to Nick than me, Vince pointed out. I assure you, I'm properly motivated to make haste, Nick chimed in. It's time spent cramped in my car on the highway versus time spent floating down a river with a cold drink in my hand.
Hear, hear,
Alex echoed. Sounds like the matter is well in hand, Vince told Sasha.
Then I'll see you there,
Sasha said, planting a peck on his lips. There was a blur and a blast of wind, and she was gone. I still think there's a bit of room left, Vince said, after he'd recovered from Sasha's speedy exit. Jill, are you sure Will doesn't want to come?
Positive, Jill assured him. That's really not his scene. Besides, he says he has some project he wants to work on during the break. Trust me, my brother is way happier with his nose in a book than his body in a swimsuit.
To each his own, Alex surmised.
I take it Roy is making his own way there?
Took off on his motorcycle this morning, Vince supplied. Said he would have someone text him the directions when they were handed out.
At least he showed a little forethought in that regard, Alice said. I suppose progress is progress.
On that note, I suggest we progress our butts into the car so we can get on the road, Nick said. I don't know about you, but I'm not really feeling spending my day in the parking lot when there's an aquatic option just a few hours down the road.
Roy fed his steel pony some gas and picked up the gallop. He was racing down the highway, sunglasses on his face, duffel bag slung across his back, and helmet nowhere to be seen. Sure, some cop might bust his balls, but one quick demonstration would show that, in a battle between Roy and concrete, concrete was going to get its shit wrecked. His phone vibrated against his side, and Roy whipped it into view. It was a text from Julia, letting him know the exact location they were starting at today, along with flowery language about looking forward to seeing him. He supposed he did owe her a good deep dicking for sending him the directions. Plus, she wasn't boring in bed, even after all these months. There was something to be said for that. Fast as Roy was going, and to be honest, the speed limit was a distant, arbitrary marker for him at this point, he was still utterly smoked a few moments later, as something that registered as no more than a blur tore past him and kicked up a tremendous gust of wind. Roy coughed on the dust that had been stirred up before choking out the word, "Bitch!" He pulled back harder on his throttle and ripped further past the speed limit, aware that he had zero chance of beating the girl who dashed past him, and equally aware that he was going to try anyway.
"I think we're ready to go,"
Dean Blaine said, as the last of the freshmen drove out of the parking lot. "About time," Angela said, walking over and stretching her back, resulting in a series of popping sounds. You'd think, when your choices are cruising the water and sitting in a parking lot, people wouldn't lag so much in the latter.
They were relaxing with their friends,
Ben pointed out.
We did the same last year.
Speak for yourself, Angela countered. By this time, I was already 3 beers deep and topless.
There's no way you were already on the river by this time last year,
Ben said.
I don't think I claimed I was, Angela replied with a coy smile.
Such a wonderful thing for the dean to hear about the female half of his chaperones,
Dean Blaine sighed.
Look at it this way. I know all the stupid crap they're likely to try, Angela said.
I suppose we'll call that a silver lining and just breeze past it,
Dean Blaine said.
Now, you two remember how this works?
Sure,
Ben said.
We meet them at the start point, unload the river cruising gear, and pile all their stuff on the bus in its place. Then we give them tubes and outfit them with copious amounts of alcohol.
One of the local staff drives the bus to the campsite, and we cruise the river with them to make sure everything is okay. That night, we camp and feed them. The next day is pretty much rinse and repeat, and so on until we come home.
Glad to hear at least one of you is up on procedure, Dean Blaine said. But I would appreciate it if you would at least go to the trouble of lying to me about the presence of underage youths and alcohol. We try to look the other way during this trip so they can let loose from stress, but there are limits. Now, off you two go. We don't want to make our students wait.
Psh, with all the tech this bus is outfitted with, I bet we beat the superspeed kid there, Angela said. We'll be fine.
Drive carefully,
Dean Blaine said, handing the blonde girl the keys. He watched warily as she hopped into the cab and fired up the engine, almost immediately stomping on the gas. Inwardly, he wondered if it was such a good idea to choose chaperones purely by rank, instead of by those with high levels of empathy and responsibility. Then he remembered some of the antics from his own trip so many years ago, and resolved that it was better to have someone who was able to handle the big problems, rather than someone with a talent for handling little ones. He hoped. 119.
Okay, people, grab a tube, a cooler for those who want them, a few friends, and hit the water!
Angela yelled to the crowd.
We're on the buddy system, so no one floats alone. Leave your crap in the bus. It'll be waiting at the campsite when we finish today.
Don't have to tell me twice, Nick said, slinging off his duffel bag and tossing it into the rapidly accumulating pile by the bus.
In its place, he scooped up a bright yellow tube and a styrofoam cooler. A cursory inspection showed it to be filled with ice, beer, box wine bladders sans their boxes, and jello shots. There also may have been a bottle of water or two, if there was room. Nick let out a low whistle.
Wow, they really do things right on these trips.
Vince glanced over Nick's shoulder.
Is that all for one person?
It is now,
Nick said, slipping the lid back on. Alice grabbed a tube and a cooler as well, with Alex and Sasha following suit. Vince tried to stick with just the tube, but he was informed in no uncertain terms that he was getting a cooler too. They assured him that even if he didn't drink the contents, someone would. The group trekked down the worn dirt path, some admiring the forest around them, while others' eyes were focused on the co-eds already splashing around in the river. They reached the edge of the water, running into Thomas, Stella, and Violet, who were already setting down their tubes. Thomas and Vince noted that each was carrying a cooler and exchanged knowing glances. It seemed those chosen to be mules for extra booze could recognize others of their kind. The crew from Nick's car, as well as Sasha, placed their tubes delicately in the river and hooked the floating drink repositories to them using attached lines of rope. Then came the stripping. It was a quick affair, one person from each group piling all the clothes into a cloth sack, while another bagged the shoes. It was a matter of efficiency and quickness, as most hurried to get water covering up these newly exposed parts of their body. Some were less self-conscious than others, though. Nick and Stella both moved slowly in disrobing down to their swimsuits, giving ample show to anyone who cared to watch. As Alice settled into her own tube, she was glad she had gone with the pink suit over the green one. Bursting was all well and good for show, but for a long day of relaxation, she didn't feel like worrying about things slipping out the whole time. The group finished bagging the clothes and cast off from the shore,
joining the slow-moving convoy of fellow students drifting down the river. They were in their own clusters, with little more than a few tens of feet between each grouping.
"Now this is the life,"
Alex said, plucking out a beer and cracking it open.
"A man after my own heart," Nick said, pulling out a beer of his own.
The others, with the exceptions of Vince and Thomas, joined in as the current began pulling them forward.
"Here at last, I see," Angela said, handing tubes to Shane, Michael, and Chad.
"We took the scenic route,"
Shane said.
"Did you now?"
Angela looked over at Chad, who shook his head.
"He tried to hijack the car and steer us in a different direction," Chad said.
If it had been an interesting experience, one would never have guessed it from his tone.
"Ah, and what stopped him?"
Angela asked.
"Me."
Chad took the tube and glanced down at the coolers. He reached into one and procured a lone bottle of water, then began heading toward the river. Michael, on the other hand, scooped up a cooler for himself, as well as the one Chad had poorly pilfered, and quickly began stepping after the blonde leader.
"So, tried to run, huh?"
"I somehow find it difficult to believe you're genuinely surprised,"
Shane sighed, accepting a tube.
"I'm not surprised. More disappointed, really,"
Angela said. She reached down and grabbed a cooler, holding it out to her little brother. He stared at her, making no motion to accept it.
"So sorry to disappoint,"
Shane said, turning away to follow his friends.
"Ahem."
Angela cleared her throat.
"Must we do this?"
"You're going to enjoy yourself," she declared.
"And the only way to achieve such a lofty goal is with the use of underage drinking?"
Shane asked.
"For you, probably. Otherwise, you'll spend the day moping in your tube, stuck on the fact that you were forced to be here, rather than just enjoying how awesome it is,"
Angela said.
"And your solution is to force me to do even more things I don't want to do."
"In for a dime, in for a dollar,"
Angela said, beaming a shameless smile. Shane considered resisting, then surveyed his surroundings. It was still morning, and while the trees cast plenty of shadows, there was no denying the sun was out in full strength. Beating Angela would be hard enough if he'd had an environmental advantage. Without it, he was as good as wrecked. Shane trudged back over and snapped the cooler out of Angela's hands.
"Good boy. Now catch up with your friends. We're strict about the buddy system here,"
Angela said.
"Then where's yours?"
"Up ahead, minding the flock," Angela said. "I insisted on waiting behind to make sure my dear little brother arrived safely."
Shane's eyes narrowed.
"You know I'm going to beat you one day."
"Maybe, maybe not. But unless you think that day is today, I'd recommend getting your hustle on."
Shane hesitated a moment longer, then took a brisk pace down the path after Michael and Chad. Angela gave him a few minutes' head start, then grabbed a tube and cooler for herself and began heading down. She hummed to herself, enjoying the sunshine and the beautiful day before her. She briefly wondered if today would be the day Shane earnestly tried to kill her. She doubted it. He was a strong kid. He could take a little more. She'd be on guard, though, just in case. 120.
"Dare," Stella said confidently.
"Fine. I dare you to shotgun a beer,"
Violet challenged. Stella dipped her hand into the cooler and produced a fresh can of low-proof alcohol. Her hand turned metallic as she slammed her index finger into the can's side while popping open the top. Without coming up once for breath, Stella drained her drink and cast the can back into the cooler.
"See, this is why games played with your roommate are always more fun,"
Stella declared, exchanging a high five with Violet.
"Your turn to pick someone," Thomas reminded her.
"Oh, believe me, I'm aware,"
Stella said, her voice bordering on predatory.
"I'm looking at you, Nick. Truth or dare?"
"Truth," Nick replied immediately. It was the obvious choice. Actions were undeniable. However, he could always lie with words.
"What in the hell is up with the glasses? I mean, seriously,"
Stella said. Nick took a draw from his own drink. He'd found that answering too quickly put up people's defenses that it might be a deception. Going slow, however, and pretending as though the act of answering required alcohol-based fortification, those things sold listeners on the legitimacy of an answer. Of course, it also helped to make it something that was either slightly revealing or embarrassing.
"They're a social mechanism," Nick said. "They keep me a little bit different, a little bit separated from everyone else. Back home, I was so used to being special because of my powers that when I came up here, I guess I was scared of blending in. So I made sure everyone would notice me."
"Huh," Stella said. "That was more honesty than I was expecting. Kudos, kid. Your turn."
"I'm picking Vince," Nick said. "Truth or dare?"
Truth," Vince said.
"Psh, that's a waste," Sasha chimed in. "Vince always tells the truth anyway."
"A valid point. But how else am I going to get the boy to drink if I don't try to catch him in a dare?" Nick pointed out.
"Fair enough,"
Sasha conceded.
"Anyway, here's my question for you, buddy. I noticed something odd when you took off your shirt. You have no scars, like, at all. Now, since you've been at Lander, you've had healers on hand to patch you on the fly, but for a guy with your level of martial arts experience, it seems odd that you never sustained any injury. What's the deal?" Nick asked.
"That's a pretty invasive question,"
Alice noted.
"I'm pretty set on making him pick dare next time," Nick said. "So, Silver, how's about it?"
"I used to have scars," Vince said. "I got into an accident when I was 16, though. I was taken care of by a healer."
"Okay, so what happened to all the injuries your body had sustained in the years prior?" Nick prodded.
"He was a very good healer," Vince said, glancing away.
"Damn," Stella said. "That's an intense power."
"No kidding,"
Alex agreed.
"Question well answered, though I feel like there's more story than I'm getting," Nick said. "Your turn." "I pick Jill. Truth or dare?"
"Dare,"
Jill announced enthusiastically.
"Oh," Vince said. "I suppose I dare you to put more sunscreen on your nose so you don't burn."
"Seriously?"
Jill asked, her excitement deflating.
"Sure," Vince said.
"Wow, okay. You guys are awful at this game."
Jill sighed, pulling out her sunscreen and briskly reapplying it to her face.
"It's not supposed to be these deep-ass questions. It's supposed to be embarrassing and at least vaguely sexual. For example, it's now my turn, and I pick Alice. Truth or dare?"
"After that lead-in, I'm going with truth,"
Alice said.
"Works for me. I've wanted to ask for a while, anyway. Are those things fake or natural?"
Alice began blushing as soon as the meaning of Jill's words registered. Still, she was playing the game, and that's how these things went sometimes.
"Natural,"
Alice said.
Apparently it runs in my family.
Ugh, and with that tiny waist, too? You're such a bitch,
Jill said, her tone full of more friendliness than her words.
I do what I can,
Alice said, taking a drink from the chilled wine bladder that had been one of the features of her cooler. It was awful, awful stuff, made even worse if the consumer knew anything about wine. Her father would have died to see his daughter consuming such swill, which might have been a significant factor in why Alice was chugging away on it.
Okay, so my turn. I choose our tan stoic,
Alice said.
Thomas, truth or dare?
Truth, Thomas said.
Let's see,
Alice said, drumming her fingers on the side of the tube.
Oh, I know. In terms of bases, just how far did you get with our little Violet back when you two dated?
I'm not sure that's appropriate for a gentleman to disclose,
Thomas began.
Oh, it's fine. That's the whole point of the game,
Violet interrupted.
Tell away, I'm not ashamed.
I believe the term is home,
Thomas said, keeping his eyes firmly away from everyone else in the group. There was a series of catcalls and whistling, as well as grumbling from Alex about even the ones who didn't want it getting more play than him.
That's right, that's right,
Violet said, lifting her arms in pride.
I nailed me a good boy. I know, I'm your hero.
Moving on, Thomas said. I select Jill. Truth or dare?
Dare,
Jill said, once more yelping with enthusiasm.
Very well. I dare you to lay a kiss on Alex that renders him incapable of coherent thought,
Thomas said.
Woo, Thomas, taking it up a notch,
Sasha cheered.
She did advocate a more risque theme in the game,
Thomas justified.
Besides, I find it permissible to look out for my friends.
Jill began paddling over to Alex, who threw up his hands.
There's no need for that,
Alex said.
I'm not into girls kissing me out of obligation. Oh, shut up,
Jill said as she reached him. She grabbed his tube and pulled herself close. Without pause, she latched on to Alex's shoulders and lifted her body up to his level. The kiss lasted for nearly a minute, long enough to become mildly uncomfortable for those watching. At last, Jill released Alex's narrow form and dropped back into her own tube, the force of her landing setting her drifting back toward Alice.
I don't know about coherent thought,
Jill said as she paddled to steady herself.
But I guarantee he won't be able to stand without embarrassment for at least 5 minutes. That work?
That works, Thomas confirmed. Your turn.
121. If you'd asked Alex, he would have told you he was buzzed. If you'd asked someone with a bit more drinking experience, they would have told you he was past buzzed, nearing snockered, and well on the road to wasted. Regardless of his level of intoxication, though, he was happy and floating along. He'd drifted away somewhat from his original group, but he was hardly concerned. There were students all around him, some still clustered, some floating freely as they found their concerns subdued by the rocking of the current and the chemical effects of alcohol. Every now and then he caught sight of the chaperones moving up and down through the crowds, keeping an eye on them to ensure everything was all right. For all their talk about the buddy system, they seemed content to let the free floaters be, so long as they were at least in eye and earshot of everyone else. So lost in lack of thought was Alex
that he didn't even notice he was coming up on another tube until he bumped softly into it.
"Whoops,"
Alex said.
"Sorry."
No worries,"
came a lilting, somewhat familiar voice. Alex blinked and lifted his head, focusing on the inhabitant of the tube he'd just smacked into. She had long, dark hair, and the bikini she wore exposed plenty of her caramel-colored skin.
"Hey, I know you. You're the chick that beat me and Vince in the finals,"
Alex declared. The girl laughed lightly.
"In fairness, I beat a lot of people in the finals."
"Oh, yeah. You had the really pretty voice."
"Well, thank you. Always nice to meet a fan."
"Don't know if I'd call it that,"
Alex said.
"But I respect the talent. I'm Alex, by the way."
"Selena,"
she said.
"You're the other telekinetic, right?"
"For the love of... fuck it. Sure, why not?"
Alex said, a measure of defeat in his voice.
"Did I say something offensive?"
Selena asked.
"No, no, not your fault. Forget it. Let's focus on you instead. What exactly is your power?"
"You mean my merry harmonies don't qualify?"
"You had a pretty voice,"
Alex admitted.
"Not pretty enough to make us just up and lose without a fight, though."
"I've had better compliments, but I'll take it,"
Selena said.
"The truth is, I'm classified as an enchanter. I cause certain effects in people when I sing."
"Like making everyone who hears it your love slave?"
Alex asked.
"That's one example, yes. It's one of my more limited techniques, however. To influence someone that profoundly requires constant stimulus,"
Selena said.
You sort of lost me there,"
Alex said.
"Sorry. How can I put this? A person's mind is resilient. It tends to buck against outside influences. So, to take you over like I did in the finals, I had to keep singing the whole time. If I'd stopped, you would have come back to your senses pretty quickly,"
Selena explained.
"There's another option?"
Alex asked.
"Sure. I can influence people in more subtle ways. Ways that don't throw up the same mental red flags, and can persist even after my voice stops."
"Huh. Don't suppose you could provide an example?"
"I can do better than that,"
Selena said. She tilted back her head and took a deep breath. What next emerged from her was a throaty, fast-paced melody. It emanated outward, rippling through the air and into the eardrums of those on the river. As it spread, so did a wave of calm. Backs unstraightened, knotted muscles began to loosen, and worries slipped out of minds, splashing, abandoned, into the water below. As the last of Selena's notes faded, she lowered her head and looked back at Alex.
"What did that do?"
Alex asked.
"I helped people chill out a little,"
Selena explained.
"Made them feel happy and more at ease with the world."
"I see,"
Alex said.
"Any potential side effects from messing with their heads like that?"
"Nah,"
Selena assured him.
"I didn't do anything bad. Just made them all feel a little bit better. I mean, worst case scenario, some people's inhibitions might go down a bit. But that's just a side effect of feeling good. You tend to worry less."
Alex barked out a laugh.
"You make people feel relaxed and possibly lower their inhibitions? You're like alcohol without the liver disease."
Selena's well-featured face creased with concern.
"Oh, yeah. Everyone is drinking, aren't they?"
"Not everyone,"
Alex said.
But a lot of us.
To prove the point, he produced his beer and downed another swig. Selena bit gently on her lower lip.
I forgot about that.
Why does it matter?
It probably doesn't,
Selena said, though which of them she was trying to assure was up for debate.
It's just that alcohol has a significant effect on the brain chemistry, and what I did will have an effect for at least a few more hours, and sometimes two separate influences can compound on one another.
So people will be super relaxed and happy. Doesn't sound like such a bad thing,
Alex said.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you're right,
Selena said. She reached over into her own cooler and produced a beer. Normally, she wasn't much of a drinker, but suddenly, she found a strong craving for something to settle her nerves. Pity her own ability didn't work on her.
Wow, you worry too much,
Alex said.
I can feel your stress from here. Chill out a little, pretty lady. It's the river trip.
She stared at Alex for a moment. She'd nearly forgotten he was also a telepath. The only one here since the short girl had skipped. That might come in handy. If people got unbalanced, he should at least be able to provide some sort of a heads up. Selena made a mental resolution not to let this boy out of her sight until she was certain there wasn't going to be any trouble. It would be fine, though. She'd only used a little bit of power, and people certainly hadn't had all that much to drink. Besides, she'd just sung them into a more peaceful, happier frame of mind. There was no way that could backfire. Probably. 122. Mary snapped her book shut with a sigh. Everyone had been gone since the morning, and she was finding herself uncharacteristically bored. Sure, she was used to being alone, but the thing about living in the woods as a teenager was that there was always something to do. Wood to chop, food to hunt, water to gather, even traps to set. On a college campus, life was much easier. That was a good thing most of the time, but on days like this, it was a solid pain in the butt. Mary was in the library, the one under Lander's surface, accessible only to those in the HCP, reading up on some historical supers. At least, that had been her plan. Unfortunately, only a few minutes into the book, and the words began slipping around the page, freed from their positions by the reality-shifting power of her boredom. Or at least, that's what it felt like. Admittedly, she could have had Mr. Transport pop her home just as easily as to the library, but her parents were swinging by tomorrow to grab her for a spring road trip, and she doubted they wanted to be disturbed a day early. They were big on taking time out to keep the romance in their marriage alive, which left her a day to kill. Mary noticed some movement from the corner of her eye. When she turned and faced the source, she fleetingly wondered if she really had gone insane. Standing on the side of the table, waving for her attention, was a small, orange paper cutout of a human shape. From the size and color, Mary guessed it had been made from a sticky note, and from the way it was jumping around trying to grab her attention, she assumed that sticky note had come from an ancient tome of great and unspeakable power. The paper man seemed to realize she was looking at him, because he pointed his arm at her, then toward the row of books off to the left.
"You want me to go into the stacks?"
Mary asked. She was taking it pretty well, but then again, when you're a telepath in a school for people who bend and occasionally break, the rules of matter and physics, your threshold for weird tends to be higher than most. The paper man nodded, then began scampering over on all fours toward her. It wasn't particularly dignified. However, it was more efficient than trying to balance on a pair of two-dimensional feet. He reached her side of the table in seconds and pulled himself back to a standing position. He pointed once more, this time at the hand she had resting on the table.
"What? There's nothing in it,"
Mary said, holding her palm face up to prove the point. In a flash, the paper man had scampered into her upturned hand and perched himself there. Once situated, he pointed toward the same area of the stacks once more.
"I see. You still want me to go, you just want to come with me."
The paper man nodded and gestured once more. Mary stared at him a bit longer, then shrugged and got up from her seat. Sure, this was eyes-meltingly weird, but it wasn't boring. That was enough to keep her entertained for now. They entered the stacks on the row her guide had indicated. She began walking down them, eyes alert for anything out of the ordinary. They'd only gone down a few rows when the paper man patted her hand and pointed her to the right. Mary made sure she had the correct row, then turned and kept advancing forward. They went on like this for a few minutes, the paper man leading her deeper into the twists and turns that the library stacks offered. Mary was impressed at the sheer volume of books these different sections could hold. She hadn't spent much time in the library, though that was likely to change after gaining first-hand knowledge of how comprehensive their collection was. The paper man pointed her down one last turn, and the purpose of their adventure became abundantly clear.
"Hi there,"
squeaked a girl hanging on the very top row of books by her fingers.
"I don't suppose you'd mind helping me down from up here?"
"Not at all," Mary said. "You're only about 5 feet off the ground, though. Why not just let go?"
"I'm scared of heights," the girl said. "I climbed up here to get a book, and then I made the mistake of looking down, and I sort of freaked out. And now I can't look down to find my footing or let go, and my hands are really starting to hurt."
"Right," Mary said. "Just close your eyes and try and relax your hands. I've got a good grip on you."
"But you're standing over..." "Right, you're the telekinetic girl. Okay, just give me a second while I try to loosen my grip."
The dangling girl took a series of deep breaths. Mary wasn't sure how long she'd been up there, though from the way her forearms were twitching, it was clear she wouldn't have been for much longer.
"I'm letting go,"
the girl announced. Mary pulled her away carefully, focusing on keeping the girl steady without squeezing too hard. Mary lowered her gently to the ground, the girl blasting out a groan of relief when her feet touched the floor.
"You're safe,"
Mary said. The girl wobbled at first, then leaned against the wall of books as she got her bearings back.
"Thank you so much,"
the girl said, her eyes still squeezed shut.
"I just wanted a stupid book about the first animator, and I've been stuck up there for 20 minutes.
"No problem," Mary said. "We freshmen have to stick together. You're Agatha, right?"
"Yeah,"
Agatha confirmed.
"And you're Mary, the number one ranked girl."
That was over half a year ago. I'm certain things will change when we get reevaluated,"
Mary deflected.
"That's not what everyone else thinks,"
Agatha said,
her eyelids slowly parting.
"Thank you,"
Mary said. She noticed the paper man in her palm was pointing toward Agatha. Mary obliged by mentally airlifting him over to the still recovering girl, depositing him on her shoulder.
"What is he, exactly?"
Mary asked.
"Oh, this little guy? Just an animation,"
Agatha said, picking up the paper guide. There was a small flash of turquoise, and the paper hung limply in her hand.
"There were some sticky notes on the shelf. I juiced them up and sent them out to find help."
"I see," Mary said. "I've heard about that power. You can control inanimate objects, right?"
"Sort of," Agatha said. "It's more like I put a little piece of myself into them, my own energy, if you will, and then they follow my commands."
"That's kind of cool,"
Mary observed.
"Yeah,"
Agatha agreed.
"That's just the first level for animators, though. Those of us who are really good can sense the location of our objects, see and hear through them, even control them like an extension of our body, rather than just as a henchman."
"Wow," Mary said. "Can you do any of that?"
"The sensing, yes. The seeing and hearing, sort of. The extension part is still miles beyond me, though,"
Agatha said.
"Otherwise I would have juiced up the entire shelf and had it lean down to lower me to the ground."
"You couldn't give it an order to do that?"
"I could, but it might have interpreted 'help me down' as 'collapse totally,' since that was the fastest way to comply,"
Agatha explained.
"Anyway, thank you again for the help. I'm going to go back to my dorm room and lie down until my hands stop shaking."
"Understandable," Mary said. "Nice meeting you, Agatha."
"You too, Mary,"
Agatha said. She headed off toward the exit, her steps still cautious, as though she expected to be swept into the air at any moment. Mary, for her part, turned her attention to the tomes surrounding her. Now that she knew about all the information here, it seemed her day might not be so boring after all. 123. The initial plan was for the tubes to be stacked up carefully in a designated area by the riverbank. That way they could be accounted for and easily dispersed the next day. Unfortunately, that plan failed to take into account the effect of several hours drinking and one super's relaxation melody on the mind of the average adolescent. The result was that as the Lander students emerged from the river at the designated point, a veritable clusterfuck of rubber tubes formed. They were tossed, dropped, or sometimes left to drift down the stream, forgotten entirely. Angela and Ben had prepared for this, having been contributors to the mess last year, and were managing to at least stop the ones breaking for freedom down the blue aquatic road. As a result, they were of little help as the predominantly intoxicated teens began the arduous task of setting up their tents. Coupled with the fact that many of the students possessed very destructive capabilities, it was thanks only to the few who had remained sober that the campsite didn't wind up as a smoking crater in the ground. "Okay," Vince said, wiping the sweat from his brow. He'd need to take a dip in the river again when this was all done just to feel clean. "I've got mine, Sasha's, and Alex's all done."
"I've completed tents for myself, Jill, Stella, and Violet," Thomas replied.
His power made the setup a much faster process, since he could use his energy to grasp multiple tools simultaneously.
"Meanwhile, I've barely managed to put up my own and Alice's, thanks to her insistence on helping,"
Nick grunted from the ground where he was tying off a stake.
"You needed my help,"
Alice protested,
her words clearly slurred.
You're drunk.
Quite right. What would I have done without you tripping into the fabric, uprooting the entire structure, and forcing me to start all over? Nick said.
Damn Skippy,
Alice said,